Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's a click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen, no lames on the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition's starting to get thick, it's a click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen, no lames on the track.
Hey, now it's the Mike and JD Show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert. And JD, by God, Oliva is out tonight. He is out unexpectedly, but everybody is safe. Everybody is okay. So you'll be seeing JD right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network very soon. But today I'm welcoming a very special guest, my brother, man. He is a TNA podcasting OG. I don't think anybody's been doing it like consistently as long as you have, BQ. But my man, BQ, man, how you doing, BQ?
Man, I'm good. I'm always excited to podcast with you. And I was secretly very happy you asked me to do this.
Yeah. Well, we're doing this, and then I think we're going to head over, after we're done here tonight, we're going to head over to the Impact Lounge Network, and we're going to do a little bit of a Q&A for on the Negative BQ channel for our friends over there at the Impact Lounge Network. So before we get started here, I do want to plug JD's book, Gaijin. His Kickstarter went live on Tuesday. I myself donated a 5 spot to get that ebook. Even though it's an ebook, I do want JD to sign the ebook. I don't know how I'm gonna get that done. Maybe a digital signature, like in the military. But I'm gonna get a copy of the ebook of Gaijin. Even though I've already read the book, I read the early copy, the PDF copy. But yeah, Gaijin is out on Kickstarter now. He actually met his first goal, and so now we're on the next goal. So JD's out there plugging the book. He's been on all kinds of different podcasts this week. So everybody, go check out JD's book, Gaijin. It's on Kickstarter right now. And you can see it on my Twitter, on his Twitter, on Facebook. It's all over the place, but everybody go check out Gaijin. And if you are listening to us for the first time, welcome and thank you for being here. If you want this content, you want it early or you want it ad-free, you don't want to deal with all the commercials on our network here and on YouTube, go to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. You can get this podcast ad-free. You can also get Brace for Impact every single week in its entirety, and you can join me live on Saturday morning, right there on the Patreon network, patreon.com/TheMikeAndJDShow. And we're also doing overtime with Mike and JD, where JD and I will do a bunch of extra topics. And right now we're in the middle of our Who Killed WCW series. And episode 2 is dropping Sunday night. So Sunday night, me and JD are going to be recording that. So everybody go check that out. But BQ, man, thank you for being here. I'm really, really happy. You were dropping some bombs on the Impact Lounge Facebook page, and you and I were DMing about it and kind of talking over the stuff. And JD, like yesterday, is like, dude, I'm sorry, I can't make it. I was like, don't worry, I think I got a guy that might want to join, and we've been trying to podcast for a while. So, but before we get into all the TNA stuff, man, I've always been curious. I don't think you and I have ever talked about this. Because we're both Air Force guys, by the way, chat. We're Air Force guys. He's Security Forces, and I'm a bioenvironmental engineer. What made you like get into podcasting? Like, what spurred this on?
So I've always, my entire life, needed a creative outlet. So throughout high school and college, I was an artist, mainly drawing. But I went to school for art, you know, a little bit of painting and all that. And it's just the ADHD side of me. I've always needed something, a really, really creative outlet. Then I got into making music, and I know I don't look or sound like a rapper, but did that for about 20 years. Had some pretty decent success with it. And then just gotten to the point where, like, when I tell people I can't watch professional wrestling for 3 hours in a row and I can't allow myself to be a wrestling mark, it actually goes back to when I was creating music, because I fell into a persona rather than the real version of me. I feel like I fell into a make-believe world, and it kind of changed me for the worse. So I actually got out of doing music, and then I needed that creative outlet. So I just got into podcasting, and I wanted to cover TNA because I had just kind of got off active duty. Again, I stopped doing the music, so I was like, I need something creatively to do. Podcasting would be awesome. I was like, man, but everyone's talking about WWE. And I just kind of started getting into TNA again, because when they went to Destination America, I lost them because I didn't get the channel. So I had watched Bound for Glory that year. It was the main event. It was like Matt Hardy, Drew Galloway, EC3 maybe.
What year was that? Was that 15?
2015.
15? Okay.
Yeah. So I watched the pay-per-view. And I was like, man, this is a really good show. So then the next day, I'm like, let me look up some podcasts. No one was talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So then I look up a couple websites, find Meltzer's rating. And everyone's shitting on this show. Like, it was the worst thing to ever hit the... And I'm like, I really like this pay-per-view. You know, I was very... and like I've said a million times, I've never been like a dirt sheet type of guy, or I don't... Back then, I just didn't get on the internet and talk wrestling. Now I do, but I didn't before. So I really was, I know it sounds funny, but I was actually clueless to the TNA hate at the time. Then I started realizing, I was like, yo, people have some blind hatred towards this company. And then by, you know, within a few months, I said, you know, I think I would like to talk about it. But because I had, in going to school for marketing, I did a lot of my own research in YouTube. And I got in on the YouTube game a little earlier. Now it's like so oversaturated, but I got into it a little bit earlier, really learned about search engine optimization and keywords. And, you know, I was able to build the channel pretty well, pretty quickly, in a way that no one had for TNA, you know. And that's why I say I'm an OG, because I've been doing it for 10 years now. I've seen people start and stop. But it was always a difficult company to cover. But just because I had knowledge of more than the average podcaster at the time of, hey, this is how to make YouTube work for me, I was able to, you know, to build something pretty good.
Yeah. And whenever I was looking to get into podcasting, it was kind of a similar story for me. Like, but I didn't start watching TNA again. I took years off, and it was like 2018. I just remember a Slammiversary from that year. I really enjoyed the show. And then I was listening to some to some of the more, you know, like Dave Meltzer and some of the other like reviewers and stuff like that. They watched the show too when they got onto the radio shows. They were shitting on over, and I was like, you know, I really like that show. I thought it was a fun time. Like I thought that Sami Callihan and Pentagon Jr. had a hell of a match, you know. And so I was like, I think I kind of dig what they're doing right now. And they're bringing over the Lucha Underground guys, and I was a big fan of Lucha Underground. And so, and then I didn't start podcasting till 2020 during the pandemic is whenever I got back into podcasting. And when I did, I was just like, you know, I think there's a fan base that's being underserved right now, because TNA, there's not a lot of people that watch the show, in the grand scheme of things as compared to a lot of the other companies. But there's still a decent number, and nobody's paying attention to them. And I was like, I felt like I could, you know, watch the show and kind of market towards that, you know, super small but super rabid and passionate fan base. And a lot of these people think that everybody hates them because they watch TNA. So I was like, I think I can do that. And I remember picking up your show, and I was like, oh man, I think I dig BQ. And then there was a couple of other podcasts out there that I was like, you know what? I think I can be the number two guy behind BQ. So I'm happy to take that number two spot, but behind you, sir. But and you've always been a helpful to me along the way too, giving me advice on how to build a channel. And so a lot of the stuff I'm doing here at our YouTube channel, that a lot of people give me shit for. You guys can blame BQ because he kind of put me up to it. So, but so I, you know, I referenced it earlier. We got some truth bombs coming, but before that, before we get to that, and unfortunately I don't have the button ready, the breaking news button. So I'm sorry. I'll try to get that uploaded for next time. Jeff Hardy, man, it was announced earlier today by Fightful Select. I believe that Jeff Hardy's contract was, had expired with All Elite Wrestling and making him a free agent here pretty soon. And then PW Insider, a couple hours later, they got on their website and they said that Jeff Hardy, not only is he a free agent, but he'll be joining his brother Matt in TNA. So the former TNA World Heavyweight Champion, probably, I would say, as far as like most popular wrestlers, he's got to be like in the upper echelon of most popular TNA wrestlers ever. I know people don't like to see him as a TNA wrestler because he's more famous from his WWE days, but when he was in TNA, he was always like the most popular guy on the show.
You're talking about Jeff Hardy?
Jeff Hardy, yeah.
Okay, I was reading a couple comments here for a second, and I missed.
Oh, chat, I'll get to you guys. Don't worry about you. I'll get to you guys. We're gonna cook a little bit.
Yeah. I got curious here and got into the chat for a second. So, So. I think we all expected Jeff Hardy to show up. Once we knew Matt was coming, we knew Jeff was likely to come. And their AEW run has been everything as awful as it could possibly be. And I think it just started with them not putting them in a good angle, in a meaningful angle off the bat. Like, their first match was on TV against the jobber tag team, and they were just never special. Instead of just kind of waiting, you know, to do something meaningful with the Bucks, they just put them in jobber match. You know, I say jobber matches. They just gave them nothing interesting to do from the beginning. And you know, we got to take all that stuff with a grain of salt, because when they say, "Hey, someone's coming to TNA," it usually is followed by, "Hey, I'm still a free agent.
Yeah.
I haven't signed here." And that's probably what's going to happen here too. So, I mean, it's already happened with Matt, so I'm not getting too excited about it. I just know that, you know, they'll probably come in, do some Broken Hardy stuff, and then try to find their way back to WWE.
Yeah. I mean, right now, especially if you're somebody that's used to making a ton of money, TNA is a pit stop in between WWE and AEW stints, it seems like. So, I mean, like, if you take a look at some of the guys right now, like Eddie and Moose are pretty like happy, and with Eddie specifically, fat and happy. They're pretty content on where they're at, right? And so those guys are probably never going to leave. But you know, like, you know, Nick Nemeth, you know, boasting that he's a free agent. Like, you know, the first opportunity he gets to go to someplace bigger, he's taken off. But with Jeff Hardy, you know, I think whenever he came to AEW, AEW was sold a bill of goods. I think they thought that maybe he was not cured of his issues, but maybe he had been moved past it. And Matt Hardy, at the point that he went to AEW, what, like, the term broken is legit with him. The guy just can't go in the ring. Like, he really just can't. And when they came and he was doing the broken gimmick, it did not work for AEW television. That gimmick only works in TNA because TNA fans are the only ones that like it. It works in TNA and it works on the indies. It is not for big arenas and big places. It just doesn't work in mainstream. You know what I mean?
In a smaller confined environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of people, and I know King of the North in the chat, he's been making fun of the Broken Hardy stuff. It's like, you can't, like, don't get mad at TNA for doing TNA shit. Broken, the House Hardy and Broken Matt stuff, it's the only place that it works. It really is. And so so they were there. And then when they were the tag team, I don't know that you can blame AEW for them not really doing anything, because they got there and they realized that Jeff was still on his bullshit and Matt can't go. And so, and then Jeff got another DUI. And then he ended up getting hurt, so they really couldn't do anything. And so I think that TNA is probably the perfect spot for them, for both of them, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but they're missing with Matt Hardy right now because they're making him wrestle. I didn't see the episode tonight. It seemed like everyone really liked the House Hardy thing.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. The TNA fans really liked it. The TNA haters hated it, but they watched it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very polarizing.
Is it what I suspected it was going to be a TNA version of Home Alone?
No, not necessarily. No, okay, it was more like, I don't want to spoil it for you, but they didn't really do any fighting or wrestling or anything, but it was kind of like the system walking into essentially a haunted house. And I'll leave it at that.
Okay. That's kind of where I was going with the Home Alone thing, but I also meant, I thought the kids were going to be like very heavily involved in it.
Every child, Rebbe was in it. All the kids were in it. Senior Benjamin's in it. All the old school characters from 2016, they're back. And they were, they're all in it. Yeah.
All right. Well, definitely. I look forward to seeing it, but no, I was just making a point. Up until tonight, it's been about the wrestling for Matt Hardy, and as you said, he can't go.
Yeah.
Jeff really can't go now either. He had some really embarrassing botches in AEW.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it'll be nice. It'll be nice to have them together again. I'm sure they'll do some cool shit, but I'm not super optimistic about what the matches would look like. If they're able to do some broken Hardy stuff and it's a brother Nero and it's entertaining and it's engaging, then, you know, it's a good pickup, but these guys are clearly at the end of their run.
Yeah. They don't have much left in the tank. And if TNA can squeeze a little bit out of them, I think it's okay. Like you said, as long as they're not wrestling a whole lot, if they're doing some skits and doing some stuff like that and maybe, you know, putting people over. And I think at Slammiversary, we'll probably get some like the Hardys versus the Nemeths or something like that. And the system, maybe do like a 3 or 4 way, just whatever they do, just don't put them in a ladder match. I don't think that we need to do that. I think that's abusive at this point.
Yeah. That would be a nightmare. They need to not climb on anything.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff fell off the ropes a couple times in AEW. So you don't need him climbing up anything. You don't need him falling and appearing that he's drunk or nothing like that. You gotta work to their strengths.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah. So Jeff Hardy coming in, I don't know when he's coming in. I wouldn't be shocked to see him at either at Against All Odds tomorrow night, or maybe even in the tapings in Chicago on Saturday night. But man, let's go ahead and get into it. You've been hearing a lot of stuff about the inner workings of TNA and kind of like the end of the Scott D'Amore era and what the company might be looking like going forward. Now, look, if you guys are here and you're a TNA doomer and you think TNA is going out of business and if you think TNA is being sold by WWE or sold to WWE, I'm sorry, this is not the podcast for you. I've been trying to tell you guys for weeks that none of that was happening, that Anthem is absolutely committed to TNA. If they were going to sell it, they would have accepted Scott D'Amore's offer. But they did not. They actually have plans, and those plans just don't involve certain people. And most specifically, Scott D'Amore. So, you know, it was what were you hearing about, you know, how D'Amore exited and maybe why they moved on from him at that point?
Well, you know, first you made a comment about Scott D'Amore's offer, and a lot of people were saying they should have sold to Scott D'Amore. The Scott D'Amore offer was never a thing. It was a thing, but the rumor that went around was that he found out he was getting fired. So then let me rephrase that. He tried to buy the company. They said no. And then that's what soured things. And then they fired him. Like that's not what it was. It was like a last ditch. Like, hey, you're being let go. And then he, you know, very quickly try to put together an offer to buy the company to save his own job, in a sense.
Yeah.
The company legally had to hear him out, but it was never a thing. It was never of interest. There's not interest in selling it. They're not selling to WWE. That's just not going to happen. They're very excited about this partnership. I'm not under the impression it's about the talent for them. I don't think they care who. Like, for the fans, they're like, hey, who's going to show up from NXT? That's not, you have to think like a business person, like that's not what they care about. If they can get their talent on WWE, they benefit from that. They don't benefit as much getting NXT talent on their show. Their benefit is the rub from WWE. And I think that's where a lot of the partnership is. Are we going to see some NXT people? Probably. I'm just saying it's not going to be to the extent that people are fantasy booking.
Yeah.
it's probably going to be similar to AEW, where it's like AEW sent Private Party that one time, and then what else did they really do? I mean, obviously, obviously Kenny and Christian Cage, they were the champions, so they had to be on the show, but there was no like talent exchange. AEW had no interest in anyone from Impact at the time, you know, so it's going to be a healthier relationship than that, but they're more concerned with the rub from WWE, and they're very pleased with how the Battleground angle took place and the match. It was a very added bonus that there was blood involved, because I didn't know where the blood came from watching the match, but it's because Jordan got her earring ripped out. But it did add to the match, and what they were going for was a finish that protected the champion. They said, we can't just send our champion on their show to lose. You know, she has to be protected. But, you know, it's someone who has like a business mindset looks at it and says, okay, they were promoting whatever you think about Ash by Elegance. They're promoting Ash and Jordan.
Yeah.
And the Slammiversary. That's what they get from it. You know,
yeah.
And
people, her name on this show is Ash by Awful, by the way.
Yes, Ash by Awful. Awfulness. Yeah. I don't. That's one of the few names I don't mess with on my show. But yeah, for the sake of this show,
yeah,
so.
So you know, back to Scott, and we'll put a bow on the whole Scott D'Amore story, because I think I've exhausted, you know, Scott D'Amore topics and Scott D'Amore thumbnails ever since he got fired, and you know, it came out that he was like gonna try to buy it and yada yada yada. You know, in your opinion and from what you're hearing, what do you think ultimately led, like, why did the relationship go south? Like, why did they want to move on from him? What was he not doing that they wanted him to do?
So I'm going to be real here, because when you listen to the Meltzers and the Sean Ross Sapps of the world, I'm not saying their information isn't correct, but when they report, they're going to be like, well, we want to be on good TNA's good side. We want to be on Scott D'Amore's good side. We want to be on this person's good side or whatever, because that's what they do. I don't give a shit. Scott D'Amore don't know me. I don't know him. He's not going to DM me after this. You know, my loyalty is to TNA and who I know there. But like, the way it's worded to me is that if you're good at your job, you're going to keep your job.
Yeah.
There's a perception that Scott D'Amore was a lot better at his job than he was. Now, he had a great relationship with the wrestlers. You can tell that by on social media. You can tell when they wrote the letter, like, they liked Scott, you know. It's not that he was like an unlikable person, but for the people appointed over him, they weren't as happy with his performance as, you know, as the fans thought they should have been. Now, when he got let go, I was guilty of it. Like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah,
this guy saved your company. And that's what some of the problems were backstage, was that he was allowing the perception to be that he was single-handedly responsible for the growth, for the excitement, for all the good that was going on. He kind of allowed that perception to be that he was the dude, when in fact there was a team of people. And you know, in the military, dude, like, because we get it the worst.
Mm-hmm.
You have that supervisor ahead of you that, I'm not saying he did nothing. That's not the picture I'm painting. But the picture that you have, the picture I'm trying to paint is when you have someone above you that really isn't doing that much work. It's the people underneath them. And then at the end of the day, the recognition goes for that person.
Yeah.
I was on a deployment one time. It was me and three dudes. We had office jobs, and we were busting our ass this whole deployment. Our supervisor couldn't even have done our jobs if we called in sick that day. Like, he didn't know what we did. End of the deployment, this dude gets the medal, and we're just standing there with our dicks in our hands, and clapping for him.
Yeah.
And it's, so again, I don't want to paint a picture Scott wasn't doing anything, but there was a team that was really responsible for a lot of what was going on. But the perception has always been, well, Scott D'Amore is saving this company. And when you do that, you're protecting yourself. So eventually he gets let go. And of course the fans are like, what are you doing? He did all these things. And I was guilty of it. I got in arguments with Twitter. That's one time where the trolls actually get one over on me, the marks, because I had people tell me Scott's not the only person at the company. And I said, well, Scott's the head of the snake. He's everything runs through him, you know? But I was actually wrong with that. That's one. But again, I just kind of fell into a perception that they needed Scott and that, you know, they don't. So it's, the company knew they were getting rid of Scott for a long time. So when these rumors have come out that, well, Scott wanted to spend money and Anthem didn't, that is not true. And it's easy to feel like, it's easy to believe why we thought that was true, because we're watching the show. We're like, yo, it looks like shit. It's looked like shit for a long time. There's people on screen who are horrible characters. So it's easy for us to believe, hey, this, you know, everything runs through this dude. But no, really what it was is that, you know, the company is like, well, we're going to spend money. You're just not going to spend it. You know, they had the vision a long time ago that their vision and Scott's vision didn't line up. The perception was also that, you know, kind of Scott was the one that's like, hey, we got to get this show looking good. It's got to look like a national televised product. Really, the company felt very stagnant under him because he wasn't making the necessary changes. So when we're sitting here and saying, yo, this show looks horrible on TV, the venues look horrible, the editing looks horrible, they know that. What was making me so mad as a podcaster was like, are they fucking blind?
Yeah.
But that wasn't the case. They knew. These people backstage are like, hey, this show looks awful. He was the one holding it back from like making the necessary changes. So you saw when Scott was let go, all these other people were let go too. From David Sahadi to fucking David Penzer. This was done because the company did not find them good at what they did. And, you know, as fans, again, we're like, oh my God, the company's falling apart. They're just getting rid of people and bringing their people in. That's not what it is. They just said, hey, we have to bring in better people. And they want to bring in television people who know how to make a show look like a nationally televised broadcast, not like an independent show, which is how it's looked for a really, really long time. I've been saying for like 3 years now, you have to look more like NXT than you do like MLW if you want to get anywhere.
Yeah.
And the company believes. Sorry, I thought this comment was directed at me.
don't worry about the comments. I'll get to the comments in a little bit. Well, I'm saving the comments. You just riff, brother.
I thought someone was trashing me for a second. I just looked down and came across it. But you know, they knew the changes needed to be made. Scott was not making the necessary changes. And that's kind of what it came down to. And again, he had a great relationship with the wrestlers. You know, Will Ospreay even said Scott D'Amore single-handedly responsible for the resurrection of TNA. And you can't run a business like that where one guy is responsible, where everyone thinks, where everyone has thankless jobs, and the one guy is taking all the glory for everything, you know. But yeah, it was incorrect in the sense that it wasn't that they were telling Scott no. They said you're just not going to spend our money. And I guess what I was saying before I got distracted there was that they're going to bring in people who know how to make television, not wrestling people. And that's kind of what people say about Tony Khan, right? Like, stop bringing in your friends, stop putting people in positions with no experience.
Well, and stop bringing in WWE people. And we're going to get to the AEW thing, because I think since Tony Khan has brought in the Kevin Dunn disciples and the Vince McMahon disciples, the show has gotten worse, and I think it looks worse than it did before whenever he had his own people, when he had people with original ideas. And now you see WWE, they brought in Lee Fitting from ESPN, and like, the show looks great.
Right.
Yeah.
And people knocked WWE for a long time for creatively bringing in people who didn't know wrestling. And it makes sense. Well, they wanted people who knew television, episodic television and drama. I mean, yeah. Obviously you got to throw some wrestling experience in there with some of the creative team, but to people that didn't make sense. And I think TNA is kind of going a similar direction where they're like, we want to make a good television show and we're going to make those changes little by little, but we have to get rid of this guy in order to get rid of this guy and this guy and this guy also, because he's not doing it. So we're going to have to do it. You know, it's like the sports franchise who, like, a coach falls in love with a player and they have to trade that player away to get the coach to, you know, to stop following their, you know, to break that love interest. It was kind of like that, but it was like, hey, we got to get rid of the coach. And then we can get rid of the players after that. So, you know, that it's just what was worded to me in person and reiterated to me a couple days ago was that if something looks like it doesn't make sense, then you probably didn't get all the information.
Yeah.
And that's what it was for us as fans. We said, well, this doesn't make sense that Scott's gone. This doesn't make, why would they just fire him out of the blue? Because we didn't have all the information. Meltzer didn't have all the information. You say it all the time, like Anthem doesn't talk to Meltzer. They don't, you know, they're not talking to Sean Ross Sapp. They're just speculating. But this company is not talking to the fucking dirt sheets. So if something doesn't make sense, because we don't have the
information. Yeah, so Meltzer and Sapp are talking to TNA people. But the Anthem executives, you know, like Leonard Asper and, you know, Anthony Ciccone and those other guys, yeah, they're probably not talking. But like other people, like wrestlers and staff members that work in TNA, they're absolutely talking to the dirt sheets. And that's why we're not getting like the full picture of Anthem side of it, because I thought this whole thing was a disaster. And this show, the television product right now is not great. I will say tonight, I'm pretty sure I watched a little bit of TNA, and I'm pretty sure Tasha Steelz and Danny Luna wrestled at a funeral, because the people in the audience were all dead. They might have well have been behind tombstones with how quiet they were. So wow. It's been tough. It's been tough at times. So I'm cautiously optimistic about some of the news that you're breaking here, especially with them wanting to upgrade the television production, because that's been a thorn in my side for years. Because once I stopped just being a guy that watches it on TV and I was watching it every week and analyzing it and doing a podcast, I would notice all these minor details and these mistakes, and sometimes huge mistakes that they would make just in their television production, like white balancing the cameras and, like, you know, being backstage and, like, you know, Gia Miller, like you would always say, Gia Miller's got shadows all over her face and looks terrible. Well, Gia Miller, more times than not, the microphone that she's using is fake. It's not a real microphone. The microphone they're using is the camera's microphone. Like the audio is always off, and like the live, you know, like the whole production has been trash. And I've been saying forever, like the TV director Sahadi needs to go, because all this is happening on his watch. And now we know why he wasn't gone, is because he was being protected by Scott D'Amore. Scott D'Amore is gone, and now Dave Sahadi was no longer safe. And so they ultimately made the decision to get rid of him. And looks like they might have a replacement. I don't know who it is, but they got somebody in mind, it looks like.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. And it's going to, and more people are going to be gone here soon. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
They obviously, you can't make all those kind of changes at once, but they're going to make incremental changes for the show to be better. They have Anthem execs at the shows now, and they're trying to help with the production of the show and how do we make this look better, to where before Scott was essentially like blocking those people from being involved. I don't know if it was like a control thing. I don't know exactly, but I don't think he had the dedication to how the show looked. Like the fans thought he did. They thought he was the one that was like, hey, we're going to up the production. That's not what it was. Because remember, they said, hey, we're going to have these production upgrades, and then it just disappeared. People thought that had to do with Scott D'Amore being gone. Like, no, Scott was the one who was kind of like blocking that from really happening and really growing. And now that he's gone, those people are now at the shows, and they're working with the team and trying to get it, you know, trying to get it to look better. The venues, they're kind of stuck with some of these venues right now, because some of the people they got rid of are the ones that got these venues, but they're going to focus here, probably 2025, of venues are gonna look good on television and look, as it was worded, like a national television show, not like a super indie. So they're aware that it looks indie, doesn't look good. We're probably stuck with that for the rest of the year. But then I would say, yeah, because they gave us venues all the way up to Cleveland. I don't know what the Cleveland venue looks like. I have no idea.
I'll just tell you what it looks like. Game Changer Wrestling is running that next month. So
okay.
Yeah, that kind of tells you exactly what that's going to look like on television.
All right, I think it was probably, I think it was already booked, but
yeah,
that's kind of, I believe that's what it was worded to me, is like next year they're going to try to make, you know, just run some venues that just look better on TV.
Yeah, because right now they're booking a lot of older venues and indie venues, and a lot of the venues that ECW was running, which makes sense because Lou DeAngeli was in charge, and so he's booking old ECW venues. And I think Gerard in the chat said something to the effect of the new guy that they have right now, and it says his name is Greg Bagarosi, Greg Bag of Donuts.
That's a military name right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's doing it right now. He was a former ECW and an MLW guy. I don't know that guy is like the long term replacement. So I think eventually they're gonna have like a full team in place. Now I theorized this, you know, last week or a couple weeks ago. You know, what are you hearing as far as like TNA and Invicta kind of being involved more often, and maybe even having either maybe not if the same production and live events department, but working together more?
God, you know, I didn't ask a whole lot in regards to that. It's not going to be the same production team, I'm under the impression. It's just going to be Anthem will be more heavily involved in the TNA side of production. So that's just kind of what was the way that it was explained to me. I didn't really ask much about Evica and their deal and all that. If I'm being honest, I don't care about them. I know like a lot of TNA fans do. I see it all the time in our chats, you know, people like, you know, Invicta this and this, like I give fucking two shits about them. So that's why I didn't really like dig too deep into it, unfortunately.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich, co-host of the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get right back to your show. Just want a brief moment to tell you about a sponsor that we have here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Arena Club. Now, Arena Club, man, they're great for card collectors. If you're a card collector out there, this is the read for you. And in this hobby, I know, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up. We think, oh man, here's the 86 Michael Jordan Fleer rookie card. It's going to be in this pack. It never is. It's never in that pack. And usually you have zero transparency on available cards and hit rates. It's all just a shot in the dark until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each and every one. And when I buy slab packs from Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And I've talked about before, I go to card shows, I grab random packs, I have fun opening them, but I know there's nothing good ever in there. There never is. There's never going to. Why? That's why they're available to buy, because there's nothing good in there. That's not the case anymore with Arena Club slab packs. They're better than those mystery packs because they have a display of available cards. They have a display of the hit rates. They have a display of the grading. You know exactly what you're getting. It's transparent. And Arena Club, more than that, they're an awesome place for collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. If you're a card collector, you get it all at Arena Club. Now, Arena Club slab packs are revolutionizing the repack game, like we said, with full transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed into your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. And the Arena Club grading process is great. It's fast, it's accurate, it's transparent, with a full grade rationale provided, an explanation of how your card was scored. You're not putting this thing in an envelope, send it out to the mail, and then get back a number. Oh, it's a 6.2. Why? Whatever. Too bad. We just said it was 6.2. No, you get all of the rationale, all the explanation of how your card is scored and how it is graded. And man, Arena Club, whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. But there's even better news here, because right now you can get 10% off your first purchase at Arena Club by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Make sure you use that link to get the 10% off your first purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That is a crazy offer. That is 10% off of your first purchase of anything. If it's a $400 slab pack, you're getting $40 off immediately just by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. arenaclub.com/VOWnet, 10% off your first purchase. And we appreciate them for sponsoring the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. Now, back to your show.
Yeah. Now, you know, Full Sail University is something that's been kind of being tossed out there for a couple of months now. And last week, Meltzer said that that deal was all but dead because of Lou DeAngeli being fired. And Lou DeAngeli was the point man. But he did end the sentence by saying that the people in the company still have a glimmer of hope that that deal was still alive. And then Sean Ross Sapp on Sunday night after Battleground was saying kind of some of the stuff that you're saying with like, hey, like, no, it's not, like, hey, TNA is not going anywhere. They're not selling. They're not going out of business. He was saying that on that podcast, but he said that, they're looking at moving to a fixed location, like relatively soon. And maybe even, you know, I can't remember exactly what he said, but kind of what you've been hinting at, like a fixed location and things looking a lot better in 2025. You know, what do you think about, you know, Full Sail University? Is that even still on the table, or did that die with Lou DeAngeli?
I don't have information in that. I will say I don't believe it is a dead thing.
Yeah,
I don't. That the vibe I'm got is that it's not dead. But there's no info. It's very tight lipped regarding that. That could be for the good. Good could be for bad. I just know it's the whole situation is really tight lipped. And one of the things that I'm trying to help them communicate to the fans is that everything was, again, I'm going to go back to what I said in the beginning. Everything was not Scott. So, and I, again, I'm guilty of it. When Scott was gone, I was like, there goes the relationship with WWE. I said that. Scott did not set up Jordan Grace to wrestle at Battleground. You know, this, it was the current, the current Anthem guys who made this happen. Like they're fostering their own personal relationships. It's not like, hey, Scott's gone. So AAA, New Japan, like I think you had kind of talked about it. Like, well, there goes AAA. Like that's actually not the case. It's just on hold because there's so many changes going on right now, but we'll see those partnerships again down the road. But this current team is fostering all these relationships and they are getting out and doing these things. But again, the perception was Scott. Scott was the guy, and nothing operates without Scott. And that's just not the case. When Battleground happened, who was there? Dr. Ariel.
It was a Chone, and it was Ariel Schnarer, and right. Jonathan Gresham. So it's pretty funny because Gresham actually, and Gail Kim, and Gresham actually posted the picture on Twitter. And he deleted it, but because I am quick, I made sure to nab that photo before he deleted it. And I was able to post it because Chone looks like a mob boss. So I was like, yeah, you know, I had to make my joke that if Jordan Grace loses, someone's getting whacked. So I made that. And then, but he ended up deleting the tweet. And I think it's because Anthem execs don't want to be seen like, you know, as being the faces of the company. They just want the company to be the face of the company, if that makes any sense.
Correct. And that is what I tell you exactly. That is why the tweet came down. They specifically did not want to be on screen. The belief is that Scott D'Amore would have wanted to be on screen, or whoever was there with him would have said, some of these guys they got rid of. If they were there with him, the belief is that, hey, we want to be on screen. We want to be recognized. We made this happen. Like, I've said on my podcast, yo, this company is faceless. I wouldn't recognize any of these Anthem guys if I walked past them on the street. I thought that was a bad thing. It's actually a good, now that my perspective is changing, I'm seeing it's a good thing because they don't want the focus to be on them. They're not trying to get themselves over, which is what I said about Scott. I said it about Don Callis. I was like, these guys, they're on screen and they're trying to get themselves over. We saw Scott do it at the expense of the talent all the time. Anthem did not want Scott on TV.
That was my next question.
Right.
So yeah. So they because I found it to be hilarious that within a couple of months after him being promoted to TNA president, because for the most part he was the executive vice president, and Ed Nordholm was the president, and then Scott gets promoted to TNA president, and next thing you know, he's an on-air authority figure. He has booked himself in the co-main event of the biggest pay-per-view of the year, in his hometown, and he wins.
Yeah.
So what did they think of Scott being on television?
Yeah, and he's hitting Canadian destroyers and because you notice when Scott was on TV, he was always putting himself over. He had the snarky comments, with the exception of him going through the table, which happened twice because they failed to use the proper fluid to light it on fire the first time. The first angle was with the Good Hands and Bubba Ray. They put him through a table. They completely fucked the angle up, so they had to reshoot it later with Macklin, and when they actually put him through fire, a fiery table. With the exception of those moments, Scott always got over. Like, he was always, you remember a wrestler would come up and talk to him, and he just start telling jokes and, oh, well, you're in the main event tonight. You're in a street fight, ha ha, and then walks away, always leaving the heels looking like freaking goofs. But they weren't a fan of Scott on screen. That was why Santina was brought in, was to transition him off screen. Because of course that coincided with him going through the table. But then he ended up right back on, and then we had two authority figures, and it made no. There's my dogs. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
It's all good.
One of the cats walking in front of him. So I was saying they distracted me there for a second. But he's always getting himself over, and
they had two authority figures. Santino was brought in to replace Scott as an on-screen authority figure, and then Scott found his way back on the TV, and Anthony was probably pretty upset with that.
Yeah, and now you got two, and we're watching on TV. It looks ridiculous. We're like, who the hell's in charge? Gail Kim didn't want to do it. It looked like obviously it would have been much better. People would have taken to her much better if she was on screen as the authority figure. But
BQ, here's a thought. How about, now hear me out, no authority figure. You don't have one. You just have Tom Hannifin announce that TNA executives have made the following match. Like, you can do a wrestling show without an authority figure on screen.
You can, but I mean, I remember back in the Tessa Blanchard days, she's always like, I talked to Impact Management, and there's no face to it. I just feel like you have to have a face. I wouldn't have a comedy character in the role.
Yeah, because Santino sucks, I think.
Yeah, the humor doesn't work in this because he doesn't have the wrestler. So Santino's humor worked in WWE because so many wrestlers were over. And when I say over, I'm talking about real genuine stars to work with. He doesn't have that here. So when he mispronounces, you know, Brian Myers' name, like, who cares? You know, like it doesn't hit the same way. But yeah, he was brought on to be the authority figure. Scott got himself back on TV, wouldn't leave TV. Scott was all over TV. I mean, when I was doing the Cool Factor, TW's always like, it's the new star of the show. Yeah. This guy's, you know, he's all over the place.
So to put a bow on all the TNA talk, we've gone 45 minutes on TNA. So if you're not a TNA fan and you come here for some AEW talk or some WWE talk, we're going to get to that in a little bit, but I want to get to the chat first. But to put a bow on the TNA stuff, now we're just getting, I think Scott's side, and I don't know if it's coming from him or not, if it's coming from people close to him. I think we've kind of heard from that side, and I think this is probably the first time that we've been hearing a little bit from the other side. Like, here's the other side of the story, and that's why we wanted to present that. BQ and I don't know Scott. I know people that know him, and they love him, and he's awesome. But it just didn't work out with Anthem, and it's not, you know, the relationship wasn't all rainbows and butterflies, and a lot of stuff that's been presented might have been misrepresented. And so we're just trying to get the other side of the story out because BQ just kind of heard all this news. And so we've offered him this platform to be able to do that. So Thank you for telling us all this stuff. But like when BQ says, like, I'm hearing this, BQ is not saying, this is what I think of Scott D'Amore. That's not what's happening. And that's not what's happening with me. This is just what he's been hearing from people with inside TNA that's getting that Anthem side out there.
And there's a little more I'll get into when I review Impact here. Creatively, there's a couple of things I'll throw in there.
Yeah. So everybody go to find Negative BQ on YouTube and check out the Impact Lounge. Join the Impact Lounge Facebook group. I'm in there. We're always in there talking shit. And that's where a lot of this news actually originated, was because BQ was dropping bombs in the middle of the night. I woke up at 5 a.m. I was like, damn, BQ, what the hell's going on?
Yep.
Yeah. But hey, so I don't really want to talk any more TNA, but we kind of have to a little bit, because we got some AEW news, and I know people, people want to hear some AEW talk. But before we get to that, let's go ahead and get to the chat. As always, guys, you could drop down a super chat to stop me in my tracks. But we got JWick 1998. He's excited that BQ's here. Jana, what's up, Jana? And then we got Big Nonzo in the house. And then Eli Samuel Rosario, what's up, dude? Alto the Squirrel, what's going on? I said, oh, this is going to be a spicy program. And then I want to give a shout out to Herbert, by the way, a Patreon subscriber for the Mike and JD Show Patreon. So Herbert, big shout out to you, dude. Thank you for being a Patreon subscriber. So King of the North says, here to make sure Mike saw the Eddie Edwards clip. So I don't want to spoil it, because BQ hates spoilers. Like, nobody in the world hates spoilers more than BQ, so I'm not going to do it. But I will just say that I'm a big fan of Teen Wolf, and that's all I'm going to say. Big, big fan of Teen Wolf, but with Michael J. Fox from the 80s. So King of the North said, they're the Washington Commanders of pro wrestling. Yeah, they're the commies. So he had sent me a DM earlier in the week. I can't remember what they had done, but they had done something that, oh, it was the Ash by Elegance stuff. You know, having, you know, basically Jordan Grace, you know, and I love the match with Jordan and Roxanne Perez, by the way. I thought it was a really good match. I don't like screwy finishes, so I wasn't happy with the finish. And I don't like the fact that they're trying to promote an Ash by Elegance match when she can't work. So I was pretty upset by that. And he said, yeah, like they just need to sell the team because they can't make good decisions. So Dan Goucher, he says, is being a TNA fan a blessing or a curse? BQ, blessing or curse, sir?
Man, it's a little bit of both. Look, I'm going to use my Indiana Fever as an example. I was an Indiana Fever fan prior to Caitlin Clark. The first year that I was a fan, because I used to live in the Midwest. All my teams are secondary LA franchises because that's home. But I was living in the Midwest. I was like, I'm not going to cheer for the Sparks because they have Laker colors. So I lived close to the Fever. I became a Fever fan, and I loved it because we were so low pro, dead last in the league in attendance, dead last in anyone giving a shit. And that's up my alley. That's
where you're a TNA fan. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. So I enjoy that as a TNA fan. Now that like the Fever are getting all this like national coverage, it's kind of a headache for me. I like kind of being under the radar a little bit as a fan of anything, including wrestling. But it's definitely a curse, because I mean, there's more haters than supporters.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sitting here defending a pro wrestling company that you like on Twitter all day.
I stopped defending it a long time ago. I was like, look, they're just TNA. They're a small company. What are you guys getting so up in the arms about? It says it's a shame that TNA considered pits to, this is Mr. Majestic for talent. Until they get a call from either Tony Khan or Endeavor, TNA is kind of on the same level of the National Wrestling Alliance. I'd say they're like national, they're NWA MLW plus, essentially. They're like a couple notches above those companies, but essentially they're just like an indie promotion that has a few people on contracts that actually has television. So there you go.
The way it was told to me is like, we have our people who we know aren't going anywhere, and then we have some people that we know probably are, and that's okay.
Yeah. Lucha Dante says, pray for the Mavs, y'all. Pray for the Mavs. I didn't realize Tony Romo played for the Mavericks, but they have choked big time this year.
They got the Dak Prescott memes going around with him wearing Mavericks clothes. Like,
yeah. And Lucha says, I need that BQ Illa Scott D'Amore diss track. That would be awesome. That would be awesome. All right, let's get into some AEW talk, and then and guys, keep the chat going. I'm gonna try to get to you guys some more. So AEW decided to go ahead and upgrade their creative room by signing coveted creative writer RD Evans off the TNA scrap heap. What is probably the most famous angle going right now that RD Evans probably has a hand in? What do you think? And that he could bring over to AEW.
You mean what's his most famous angle in TNA?
Well, the one that he's working on recently.
Ash by Elegance.
So you're saying RD Evans is in charge, was writing the Ash by Elegance program, and that's who Tony Khan decided to hire.
Yes, sir. I'm going to get into more on my podcast about the Ash by. I'll get into more about that.
Yeah, save that gold for your show.
Yeah, but yeah, that's again. Remember what I said? Like, they got rid of people. I mean, RD Evans said he left on his own, right? But the exodus was people who weren't good at their job. Yeah. As blunt as I can fucking put it. So that's who Tony Khan wants to bring. Last time Tony Khan brought someone who wasn't good in TNA, it was Jimmy Jacobs. And you could immediately feel it on AEW television.
Like, BQ, they're doing the learning tree. Like, literally, an exact carbon copy program that Jimmy Jacobs wrote on TNA, the learning tree, headed by Brian Myers, and he had his little gang of goofballs with him doing bad comedy. And I'll be honest, I kind of thought the learning tree had some funny moments, to be quite honest, the Brian Myers version. Yeah, but now he's got Chris Jericho doing that same exact character, but this time with Big Bill, and now he's brought in Brian Keith, and I get the feeling Sammy Guevara is going to be in on it too, and it's crap.
It's the worst work of Jericho's career. I talked to VSK, and they really liked the learning tree stuff, and he goes, we just showed up to work one day, and now, okay, it's over. Yeah. And now I'm wondering, yo, did that coincide with Jimmy Jacobs' departure? That's kind of what I'm thinking in my head as a possibility.
Well, you know what else Jimmy Jacobs was in charge of was the Taylor Wilde tarot card gimmick and all the witchcraft. And then he brought that over, and like, next thing you know, Julia Hart's doing it on AEW. And I was so happy to tell JD about that, because that's why JD quit watching TNA, was because of the witchcraft stuff. And then they immediately brought it over to AEW, and I thought it was brilliant, just because I wanted JD to be mad about it.
Yeah. But in their defense, the Julia Hart Sky Blue stuff is presented a lot better than TNA's version of it. Well, much better.
Bigger budget, and they have more people to be able to control the scene. And yeah, so definitely. And I think actually at some point Julia Hart ended up getting herself over with that stuff.
Yeah. And it helps that you know, the fans want to fuck Sky Blue and Julia Hart.
Yeah.
You know, so that helps.
Yeah. Doesn't hurt. Yeah. So you've been watching, I know you keep up with AEW too. What do you think about the, you know, them bringing on more WWE people into AEW? Because when I started watching AEW, I wanted them to be the anti WWE, and they still are to a certain extent. Like, you're not going to get to see matches that like Will Ospreay is having, like these epic matches and all this other crazy stuff that he's doing and Swerve's doing and a lot of the other guys. But I was watching last night, and they literally got Christopher Daniels out there cosplaying as Adam Pearce.
Yeah.
Like, he's doing the same exact character. They went from having essentially no authority figures to having, right now they have four. And I think when Kenny Omega comes back, they're going to have five authority figures on the show. And it's, and they're crossing over. Right. And they're doing a lot of the same stuff, and they're doing some bad comedy. It's like, what are we doing here? AEW, you guys used to be the cool show. And I was actually listening to Meltzer earlier today, and he was talking about the beginning of Nitro and how it would come from, like, you know, nightclubs, or it would be at like college campuses and stuff like that. And like, that was the cool place to be. When AEW first came online, that's what AEW was. It was like, you would look into the, you'd watch the show, and every single week was a party. And now it's just them cosplaying WWE.
Yeah. I saw Orange Cassidy today. It was like, he put out a quote, like, we want AEW to be, to be cool again. And I'm like, but wrestling, number one, is not cool. It's very difficult to make wrestling cool. You can't just manufacture it. Sometimes it happens organically with the Stone Colds, the Rocks of the world, and really the early AEW days. But then every time Tony Khan, who's a very uncool person, gets on screen, that drags down your product. You know, the more nerds and more dorks you put on screen, like the less cool it's going to be. And it is a bad version of WWE right now. Like you see, I've got my Dark Order shirt. I think you didn't like them, but biggest fucking fan of them, dude.
Well, I have to correct myself. I was not a fan of the way they were presented at first with their first inclusion, but when they were on, they were doing some of their skits with Brody Lee slapping stuff out of people's hands. I thought that was really funny, and I was a big fan of Brody Lee.
Yeah, once they built the stable, and like, so they had something very interesting in their stable where they're a heel stable. Colt Cabana is a part of their stable. He's a white meat babyface. But they made it work. Like they would do six, Preston Vance, Allen Angels, and Colt Cabana were trios, whatever. Two were heels, one is a babyface, but they found a way to make it work, and it wasn't bad, you know. Like, that just shows when you got some focused creative that you can do some stuff different. But now it's very much a carbon copy of what they see in WWE. If I wanted to see these people from WWE, dude, I would watch that show.
Yeah.
Like, and I've never been big on let's load the talent, the roster with old wrestlers. Like TNA has done that with the RVDs and the Dreamers. And I have fucking Ken Shamrock signed to the company for a year with liver spots and no tan. You know, like I don't know what their target fan base is when you do that, when you bring in guys in their 50s, you know.
Yeah, we got some WWE notes, and then we're gonna send it home because BQ and I are gonna go over to the Impact Lounge channel. We're gonna do a Q&A over there, we're so thankful that BQ was able to make some time for us today. Man, Ricochet left the WWE. I mean, he's going to AEW, right? Like, there's no doubt about it at this point.
Yeah, dude, I've seen the TNA. I saw a TNA post, not TNA, but TNA fans says, why not us? You know, I'm like, he's not coming here. So Ricochet he flat out said on Twitter that he wasn't going to TNA when he was a free agent the first time.
Yeah.
He never had it. He watched TNA because he said he had friends there. He had never had interest in signing there. He's definitely not going to now. But the problem is on WWE television, there's no one like Ricochet. AEW, there's a lot of Ricochets over there. I know he has his own skill set, but so does Rey Fénix. And does Rey Fénix stand out from fucking... I'm trying to think of another just random high flyer that does some flips. I mean...
So with Ricochet, he could have stood out more in WWE, but I just never really felt like they got behind him. Like, they got behind him a little bit in NXT, but when he got onto the main roster, I just never felt like they ever believed in him as a character and believed him in as a guy that really could be at the top. And I fully believe in him. And I think when he gets over to AEW and everybody's like, he's just going to be going from one mid-card company to another mid-card company. But at least in AEW, he'll get to do his shit. And that's what I want to see. I want to see him do his shit. I get to see Fénix do his shit. Now, is Fénix ever going to be the world champion? Of course not. But at least I get to see him, like, be awesome. Right?
His opponent gets hurt.
I don't care if he's second match or last match, he gets to be awesome.
Yeah, I said if Fénix's opponent gets hurt in the match, he might. When he got the title from Moxley.
Yeah.
When he got I understand what you're saying about Ricochet, but just to play like devil's advocate, WWE is rarely wrong about somebody.
Man, they were wrong about Swerve, brother. I mean, like, I've seen them be wrong about it, and they were wrong about Drew McIntyre too. They fired his ass, and he made a name for himself. They're wrong about Cody Rhodes.
But then
they're not always wrong. They were right about Aleister Black and Keith Lee and some of these other cats. I just personally, because I watched him for a long time before he went to WWE, I think they're wrong about Ricochet. I'm gonna put myself out there and say that. Now, a year from now, I could be, come on this show and be like, okay, I was wrong, but I think they're wrong about Ricochet.
Like, I see someone here says wrong about Tony Storm. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're always wrong, but they're usually right. You know, it took Drew. Yeah, I mean, yeah. But Drew ultimately had to come back to W. There's few, though, who became stars leaving WWE. Like, Drew got himself over. Cody got himself. Oh, well, Cody probably. But Drew had to come back to be a star.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see a year from now.
We'll see a year from now. If a year from now, like, he hasn't really had any meaningful matches, which I think, like, right away, they're probably going to burn through a bunch. Like within the first couple of months, he's going to wrestle Ospreay and he'll wrestle Pac and or Pac, whatever you want to call him. And he'll wrestle Danielson before Danielson retires. But if, like, a year from now, he is like on the pre-show in a trios match, he'll be like, okay, yeah, maybe I got that one wrong.
But to support your theory in Lucha Underground, he wrestled with a lot of those guys, and he was the dude there.
He was the tippy top guy in Lucha Underground. He was awesome as Prince Puma.
Yeah.
Prince Puma freaking ruled.
And there was the Phoenix and Pentagon and Swerve and all these dudes there, you know, so.
Yeah. I love that crew. Which makes sense why I've always been a big supporter of Swerve, because he was on Lucha Underground. Lastly, I had some other notes, but we have already gone over time because I did tell BQ we'd only go an hour because we got to get to another podcast right after this. But Hikuleo from New Japan, he is going to be joining. It looks like he'll be joining his brothers Tama Tonga, Tongaloa, and the Bloodline coming up here pretty soon. Looks like they're going to call him Tala Tonga. The tall one of the Tongas is going to be Tala Tonga in WWE.
I think his real name is Tala, but T-A-U-L-A or something like that.
Yeah, but they're spelling it T-A-L-L-A.
L-L-A, yeah. It's going to be interesting to see where he falls into the equation, because right now you've got the three on screen. You can eventually put him versus the three, the Usos and Roman, but now you keep throwing new people in there.
Where
the fuck is coming from?
MLW? Yeah. So... It's gonna be Solo and the Tongans, right? Because Hikuleo will be with Solo and his brothers, and it's Solo and Tama Tonga Tongaloa, and then when Roman comes back, he'll have the Usos, and he'll have Jacob Fatu from MLW.
Right.
And so then it'll be 4-on-4, and that's like probably your War Games match later this year.
The NWA just debuted the Savage Samoans, and they're from the same, like, the sons of Sika, like they always are. Yeah. These motherfuckers suck. So there's no, like, I was so disappointed when they wrestled. I was really looking forward to it. Let's see. It's a really tall guy, kind of like who were you just talking about? Hikuleo. Not that tall, but he's a tall dude. And then you got a shorter, fat guy that's more of a, like, Falaba type dude. They've taken him off his feet the first match.
That's funny.
Doing comedy. I was like, oh my God, you guys just fucked them up in one match.
Yeah. Hold on. I got Dan Goucher on. He said AEW better lean into an ambulance match with Ricochet. So the idea that I saw for Ricochet online, because he got taken out in an ambulance on Raw, him and Samantha Irvin, I think that he should debut like in the back of an ambulance, or like driving an ambulance to the arena on Dynamite. Like, I thought he should have done it this week. I don't know if he's a free agent yet or not. I thought he was free, but like that's how he needs to debut on the show, is in an ambulance.
I actually agree with that 100%.
Yeah. But all right, guys. Hey, thanks everybody in the chat. Mr. Majestic, Io. Io, I don't think I got to you earlier. Io, Jacob Fatu on Roman side. I appreciate everybody being here. Head over to patreon.com/TheMikeAndJD Show. Become a Patreon subscriber today. This weekend on Brace for Impact, I'll be recapping tonight's episode, and I'll be doing Against All Odds recap. That's because Against All Odds is tomorrow night, Friday night, and from Chicago. So I'll be recapping both shows, and then I'll talk about whatever new news is out. Be sure to check out the Impact Lounge, Negative BQ. Look that up on YouTube, because he and I are about to go and do a Q&A, but also on his Impact review later this weekend, he is actually going to get into even more depth and more detail about what he elaborated on tonight with us, with the future of TNA under the Anthem umbrella. So thank you everybody for being here. I greatly appreciate it. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen, no way. From the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A game. Better bring your A game. Competition's starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. Amen.
Hey, everybody. My name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.